Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films, Meeting Gorbachev, Barbara Rubin and the Exploding New York Underground, and Hail Satan, and where do you find these, David? Question mark.
Hi, Joe. Well, I find them actually in movie theaters because these are all current movies, and our theme for today, because what these movies all have in common is that they are all documentaries, all movies filmed about real life subjects, but the subjects themselves are pretty darn different from each other. So let us begin with Meeting Gorbachev, which is probably the one of these movies which will have the widest distribution. This is a movie by the very great Werner Herzog, one of the really great filmmakers who's been around for decades and decades, and he, throughout his career, from the very beginning, he has gone back and forth between fiction films and documentaries. He's made just such an enormous body of work, and certainly not all of his films are great, but he has just become a really, really major figure on the world film scene, and his movies are very often seen pretty widely in American movie theaters, even though he is German himself. So, this is one of his documentaries, and the title is Meeting Gorbachev, and that is exactly the subject of it. It was actually co-directed by Werner Herzog and Andre Singer, and what they did was they managed to get the good interview time with Mikhail Gorbachev, the former leader of the Soviet Union. He was the last president of the Soviet Union before it collapsed, and he had a fascinating career. Now, I will put my cards on the table. I regard Gorbachev as one of the great leaders of the 20th century, one of the great leaders of my lifetime. And my lifetime goes back quite a ways by now. And he's just a phenomenally important and phenomenally great figure. Of course, a lot of people don't like him at all. But he is the one who presided over the final stage of the Soviet Union. He became the leader of the Communist Party and the president of the Soviet Union. And the whole enterprise, the whole Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, was getting awfully shaky and going through awful troubles, and they had been through a succession of leaders just before him. And he was able to bring into play the policy of glasnost, which was an opening up, a transparency that had never been seen before in Soviet government affairs, perestroika, the restructuring of the entire system. And eventually the whole system collapsed, it imploded upon itself, and that was one of the truly monumental events of the later part of the 20th century, or indeed of the whole 20th century. And then, of course, he was succeeded by Boris Yeltsin, who only plays a tiny little role in this documentary, and then the Soviet Union, then, of course, Vladimir Putin, who is there now, and all kinds of changes have taken place. But this is a movie very much about Gorbachev and the Gorbachev years, and what it does is it intersperses interviews between Herzog and Gorbachev, who are sitting there in chairs just facing each other. Gorbachev is going on 90 years old, so he's a pretty old guy, but he speaks pretty fluently. It alternates between that and a sort of overview of Gorbachev's own career, his starts, his early life, his education, his rise up in the Soviet Communist Party and the Soviet governmental hierarchy and so forth, and then the history of what happened after he became the leader of the Soviet Union, and then the eventual collapse of the Soviet Union and the coming down of the Berlin Wall and all of that sort of stuff. So we have, again, interspersed back and forth between these interview segments with Herzog talking to Gorbachev, and with a kind of a documentary overview of the rise of Gorbachev and then the eventual crumbling of the Soviet Union. Now, I have to say, this is not one of Herzog's greatest documentaries. Gorbachev has really very little that's interesting to say. It's interesting to hear him talk and to hear him reminisce and to hear him speculate and kind of ruminate on things that happened, but it does not go very deep. And he is not really, he speaks very nicely, but he is not, he doesn't get deeply into things. And then the overview of the history, of his own history and Soviet history of his period in the leadership, you know, is stuff that it will be very educational for people who weren't around or weren't paying attention when that stuff was going on. But again, it doesn't get very deep. So the movie is good. Meeting Gorbachev is good as a kind of an overview of what Gorbachev was like, what his personality is, what happened during his rise and during his time in power. It does not get, however, deeply into these things. It's rather superficial, and parts of the movie are just throwaway. There's a whole section of it where Gorbachev, where Herzog presents Gorbachev which with a gift, which is a whole bunch of sugar-free chocolate, since Gorbachev is now diabetic. It's all very sweet, but it does not add very much to our understanding of anything. But again, I enjoyed watching the documentary. It's good to see Herzog talking with such an important world figure. I've known Herzog a little bit for many years. He's a terrific filmmaker. I wish this movie got more deeply into things, but for people not familiar with the period, the last period of Soviet history, I'm sure it will be very educational. And for that reason alone, it is a worthwhile addition to the current movie scene. Our second movie for today, Barbara Rubin and the Exploding New York Underground, is directed by one Chuck Smith, and it is a movie about the avant-garde film scene, mostly in New York City, mostly in 1964, when this figure named Barbara Rubin kind of burst onto the scene and was briefly a great star in the kind of New York underground film and underground avant-garde art scene. Now, a little bit about that. Avant-garde film, it's a very slippery term, a kind of an amorphous term, but it refers to movies that are really not made to be seen in movie theaters, made to be seen in museums and galleries and places like that, mostly non-narrative films, movies which are true works of art. I often compare avant-garde films to poems. They are not there to tell a story in most cases. They're there to explore certain ideas or emotions in kind of non-linear terms, and that is very much the scene that Barbara Rubin rose up in during the 1960s. One of the fascinating things about this is that this was very much a male-dominated scene, and Barbara Rubin, a woman, got to become quite a major figure in the scene for at least a few years back in the 1960s. And her most famous film was a movie called Christmas on Earth, which is a very, very avant-garde-ish film, mostly about sex, about the joys of sex, about the ecstasies of sex, made to be shown with two different projected motion picture images, one upon the other, and with all kinds of sexually explicit, again, very non-linear presentations, very often close-ups of body parts. Again, the kind of poetic enterprise that avant-garde film in the 1960s largely was. And this movie, partly because of its sensational content and partly because of its poetic power, I've seen it, got her a lot of attention and made her a major figure in this very male-dominated scene. And that is what this movie, Barbara Rubin and the Exploding New York Underground, explores. And it gets into people who Barbara Rubin was close with, including most famously for a while the Andy Warhol crowd, the factory crowd. So Andy appears in the film, and a lot of the sort of factory scene appears in the film during the time that she was involved with that. And there are some pretty well-known movie critics. I was not in New York during most of these years, but people who were, like Jim Hoberman, a very important critic for the Village Voice, Amy Taubin, they and some others discuss Barbara Rubin's career, as we see all kinds of archival footage, and just kind of generally get to explore her career, and also the personality and life of Barbara Rubin herself, who just came out of a very ordinary middle-class background, but became this very important figure in the New York underground art scene for quite a few years, and then had a very interesting end to her career because she was very heavily involved in drugs, which did a large part in really harming her body. And there's some pretty harrowing material in this film about the physical travails that she went through because of her drug abuse during a lot of these years. And then eventually she suddenly seemed to change in an enormously different direction. She had grown up Jewish, but was never very interested in her Jewish identity. but suddenly she became an Orthodox Jew, joined a Hasidic community, moved out to the suburbs, was enmeshed in this community, had a couple of marriages, totally left the underground art scene, the underground film scene, started to have children one after another, and very tragically died after giving birth to her fifth child, died of an infection that she contracted. So fascinating career from being this sort of doyen of the New York underground art scene. She became a very orthodoxly religious person and a mother and died an unfortunately early death. And so Barbara Rubin and the exploding New York underground gets into all of these things. Anybody with an interest in the art scene of the 1960s, especially in the experimental film scene of the 1960s, should not miss this movie. And anybody just interested in a woman who had a blazing career in a very male-dominated field back in the supposedly liberated 1960s will find much in this movie that will be very, very fascinating. And for our last movie, for better or worse, it is a movie called Hail Satan, and it does in fact have that question mark, and it is about Satanists. Specifically, it is about a Satanist group called the Satanic Temple. But before you draw any immediate conclusions on that, folks, these are not the Satanists that you might expect. This is by Penny Lane, who is a very feisty documentary maker on the current scene. The movie is pretty interesting in its own bizarre sort of a way. It is, again, about this this church called the Satanic Temple, and they are, in fact, Satanists, and they do, in fact, worship Satan. But, you know, they keep emphasizing in the so many different encounters and interviews and documentary, well, it's a documentary film, but all the different sort of real life segments in the movie, all that these Satanists keep emphasizing is what nice people they are. And they're not about evil. They're not about bad things. They're just about freedom and about liberation. And Satan is just the spirit of life, not the spirit of evil. So we have all of these Satanists who keep talking all the time about how there's nothing satanic about them. There's nothing evil about them. There's nothing particularly bad about them. They're just lovely people who just want to celebrate the joys of life. And, you know, they mean it. So take that for what it's worth. It's very, very interesting how these people keep protesting about how to be a Satanist is really just to be somebody who loves all the good things in life, and there's nothing bad about them. They do, however, have a somewhat serious agenda, and that agenda is, and this is very much a part of the movie, to combat what they would probably call and do call this sort of term, Christian hegemony. They are against the idea that the United States, because this is a very American film, it's a very American group, they're against the United States, the idea that the United States is a Christian nation. And this is, by the way, a controversial notion, not only among these so-called Satanists. Of course, a lot of people feel that, including many, many, many Christians, feel that America is not a Christian nation. It is a secular nation. There is a wall between the church and the state in this country, and that everything should not be Christianized. And that is one of the big agendas of so many of these so-called Satanists who we meet in this movie, Hail Satan. They are very much against this. They want equality for different kinds of faith. And in a way, for some of them, it seems that being Satanist is just a way of saying we are people too, and we get a right to have our beliefs and our notions and our convictions right alongside all the people in the dominant religious group or groups. Now, a sort of a sub-theme of that, which is very important in the movie, is the idea of First Amendment rights. First Amendment, of course, guarantees freedom of speech. It also guarantees freedom of religion. And a whole theme of this film is a fight to get a Satanist monument set up alongside a Ten Commandments monument, which has been set up in a public place. So we get into those debates in this movie very much. When you have a city, a state house, where there's an enormous monument of the Ten Commandments set up on public grounds, which are paid for by taxpayer funds, shouldn't other faiths have their own rights right alongside that? And they want to set up their sculpture of Baphomet, a satanic figure in their view, right alongside the Ten Commandments. And so there's a big First Amendment battle over this, and it gets covered in the news media. And there's more than one battle like this, as I alluded to in the film, but one is covered in some detail. So we have a movie which is about some things which really do affect us all, such as freedom of religion, freedom of speech, the idea of religious materials being displayed and set up on taxpayer-funded properties and that sort of thing. The people we see in Hail Satan are largely a pretty goofy group. And it seems to me that they're sort of a bunch of wusses in a way, because again, they're not, in my view, they're not really Satanists. They're just people who are celebrating Satan as a symbol of their own freedom to sort of tweak the establishment. And that's really what this movie is very much about. It's a fun movie in its way. It is not a particularly dark movie, and it does get into some of these interesting public issues. So I don't think Hail Satan is any kind of a great film, but it's an entertaining film to watch, and it puts you into the company of some people with some pretty kooky notions, and it's sort of fun to watch them work those notions out for about an hour and a half. So that is my non-fictional story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you as ever, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Meeting Gorbachev, Barbara Rubin and the Exploding New York Underground, and Hail Satan.